Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have spoken on many occasions about the injustices in America and the tampering of evidence by law enforcement. We also speak often of the mass incarcerations in this country as a result of wrongful convictions, retaliatory sentencing, racism, and corruption within the government. Today we will be interviewing just another victim of injustice in this country's penal system. He will discuss what he has been subjected to for the past 20-plus years. Let's welcome Sidney Stallworth, a prisoner from Mississippi. Sidney, are you on with us? Sidney?
Muted. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Okay, Sidney, okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about what happened in your situation and how you ended up serving a life in prison?
Yes, I'm a person who has a history of mental illness. I have a history of mental depression, deep mental depression. And in 1998, there was an altercation with me and my then girlfriend, Bridget Shields, and I was actually defending myself, and I ended up killing her. And as a result, I went into a deep mental depression, one that I stayed into until 2013. Once I come out of my mental depression in 2013, I went to looking at what took place at trial because I didn't do anything at all in my defense. A person who is mentally depressed kind of wants to be punished. You know, it's like he kind of wants to crawl in a hole and die, you know. And with the taking of life, I mean, I had that same feeling. I didn't defend myself. I didn't do anything for my lawyer. I just wanted to crawl in a hole to die because I had taken a life. But the facts of the case is that they took me to court and said that I stabbed the victim 17 times, when in actuality I stabbed the victim twice in defending myself. She come inches from hitting me in the neck with a knife, and that is what I had to defend against at that time. And with that happening like that, I just reacted, and my reaction was to stab back, and which resulted in her being stabbed twice. The first stab wound was it shocked me because I had never did anything like that. And when I looked at the knife, I was looking upon a bone knife, and I was like, surely I have killed this girl, you know. And out of disgust, I kind of like hitting against the wall, and I stabbed her again. But it was like frustration of, damn girl, you made me, you know, hurt you, you know.
And, now, I saw the video, Sidney, where there were you, and I would like to, somehow I'm going to figure out how to share that video, but there were two stab wounds, and yet in court they tried to say there were 17 stab wounds. I also want to mention real quickly, I've worked with prisoners, and I know a prisoner in particularly that suffered from severe depression, and I don't know if the audience is aware, but sometimes severe depression can lead to one of two things, either homicide or suicide. In most cases, people have taken their lives, and unfortunately, in some cases, people have taken someone else's life. And people do not understand that this is a serious sickness. And again, I always say that rather than people being sent to prison when they have been determined to be seriously depressed at a time of a crime, they need to be sent to substance abuse or mental health or even anger management, long-term facilities. Prisons do not resolve the problems, and I just wanted to bring that up real quickly while you're talking about this story, because there was not only tampering of evidence by the police, there was also serious depression involved in this particular case.
And also I went to the different courts. A lot of people don't understand the legal system. The legal system is kind of messed up. Not really kind of. It's messed up real bad because I went to the different courts to try to make them make the state produce the evidence which is the autopsy photos. And I went to the Mississippi Supreme Court, the Fifth Circuit. They got a Public Records Act of 1980 here in Mississippi where you should be able to get your hands on these records. And they have denied me at every turn. And a Freedom of Information Act has been filed, and they have never even answered that. I mean, that's been like over 3 months ago. They never even answered that, the Freedom of Information Act. So I've been met with resistance at every turn. I've even went to the coroner's office and requested the autopsy photo from the coroner's office, and he will not release them, you know. The thing of what happened, basically they took and used perjured testimony in order to get me convicted, you know, because with the information that was brought out at trial, the jury has the option of, even though I didn't testify, but when the things happened, people had knowledge of what happened, even though I didn't testify, the testimony that was given at trial was the fact that we both had knives, but of course the amount of stab wounds was never brought out, the right amount of stab wounds was never brought out. And by me being on mental depression, I just, you know, I really just took what they gave me. You know, I kind of wanted to die. You know, people look at things from biblical standpoint. My mother told me years ago, she said, well, you know, Sidney, King David killed someone and God forgave him. But when it comes to taking a life, I mean, I understand what happened with King David, but you can't compare that. You know, it eats you inside, and it really tears you up inside when you take a life. And you know people do take life, but for a person like me who knows the value of life, for a situation like that to happen, it sent me deep in a deep depression. And when I came out, my mother, my father, and my older sister were all dead before I even come out of my depression. So when I come out, I didn't have any help to get these photos to prove what happened. And then there's other evidence that could have been brought forward to let the jury know that the state was basically saying that I got upset with the victim and just killed the person, you know. But there was evidence of other people who knew what was going on at the time and knew that was not the situation. They don't know what happened.
You lost all your family members after you went to prison?
Yes. I lost my mother in 2001. Depression runs in the family. My sister got depressed. My mother died. She was like her best friend, you know. And she got depressed and stopped taking her insulin. And she went into a coma. And she was doing all right, but by her laying up in the hospital, there was a blood clot that developed in her leg and went to her heart and it killed her. So the reason her being there was because she got depressed. You know, depression runs in our family. It's one of the major diseases that the Starwood family has is depression. You know, and the thing about my situation, when I was locked up in jail, they put me on the medication for depression. They Depakote is a drug that you take for depression, but you can take it and never really know what's going on around you.
I've heard that from other prisoners too. They give you medication that almost puts you in a zombie state, and you're unable to defend yourself or protect yourself in any way if something happens. So a lot of prisoners that have that either post-traumatic stress disorder or depression, some other type of depression, they really don't want to take the medication because of that effect that it leaves.
You're not able to defend yourself. I mean, anybody could come up and do anything to you, you know.
Yeah.
There was an
incident
when I was in the county jail, and I had went out to lunch to get my lunch tray, But before lunch, you get your medication. So I got my medication. I come back and I sit up in the bed. And so my roommate come, he say, the tray's out here. And I looked at him, I say, tray's out there. I say, tray's out there. We just ate. He said, Sidney, you've been, ever since lunchtime, you've been sitting in that bed, just sitting there, standing at the wall. That was from 12 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Difficult does you like that. It just puts you in another world to where you don't know what's going on around you.
Yeah. Now, what kind of treatment are you getting while you're in prison for that? Other than the medication you're afraid to take, what other treatment are they giving you?
Well, basically, they really here, I'm at a mental facility. Really, I'm at East Mississippi Correctional Facility, which is for mental patients. And basically, they just put you on medication and leave you there. They really don't give you any other type of treatment for it, you know.
I'm glad you're saying this, because a lot of people have misconceptions about these prisons and the treatment, the rehabilitative treatment that the Department of Corrections is providing. And they have to know that these are things that are not being, and not only with what you're talking about, with other situations, with other rehabilitative programs, you know, people being denied in prison. And the Department of Corrections officials, they're always saying, you know, the prisoners don't do this and they don't want to do this. But in all reality, they're not really offering them or allowing them to do these things that they need to do to become productive or to be, you know, rehabilitated in some way or to be treated psychologically or physically or whatever the case may be. So this is a big problem in the prisons. I'm glad you're bringing this out. Now, I was going to say, is there anyone that you have supporting you through all of this? Do you have any family left or friends or advocates of in any sort?
Well, I have a brother. I have a brother and a couple of sisters. But, you know, in life, when you grow up, you know who loves you and who don't love you. You know, who will be there, who won't be there.
Yeah.
I lost all those who cared about me. My father really did because of what my mother would have did. I mean, we know our family members. But my mother loved me and my older sister loved me. The rest of them, if it ain't about them, it ain't about anything. You know, they use the words, but they don't show that they love me, because in my situation that I brought to them, if my older sister or my mother would have been alive, they would have went to a lawyer and say, I don't know what it's going to cost, but I need to get those documents. You know, I need to get those photos, you know. And
now, do you have any, when you went to prison, did you have a public defender?
Yes, her name was Lisa Collins. She kind of held my hand and got me a life without telling. Basically, that's all she did.
Did anybody appeal? Did you have anyone appealing the conviction?
Yes, she appealed. Yes, she did the direct appeal.
So did both? She did the trial and the appeal?
She did the trial and the direct appeal, yes.
And I didn't know that was possible. I thought that they usually assigned someone else to do the appeal.
Well, in 98, they really didn't have the state public defender's office in 98 when I got convicted. So normally the person who went to trial with you was also appointed to do your direct appeal.
Okay.
So that's how things were. That's how things were back in 98 was when I got convicted.
And you haven't been able to find a lawyer to help you ever since? Have you tried, or has anyone? I want to say another thing about family. I'm really disappointed because this is where you find out just how much people love you, because there's been so many families that have backed away from their loved ones after their loved ones get sentenced to prison for life or anything. And sometimes it really hurts because your family is so close, and then once you really, really need them, it's like friends. Once you really need them, you find out who your family and friends are. In situations like this, family becomes prisoners, their loved ones, their advocates. We become family when we have a loved one that's inside, and everyone seems to forget about all the good that they have done in their lifetime. And that's the unfortunate reality. That is the unfortunate reality. But the reason I ask if you have a family member is because I'd like you to give the audience some way that they can connect with you, whether it be through writing or whether it be through calling a relative, and how we can maintain communication in the event that something should happen with you inside where you can't call out. And we will have you back on again, but just to give some kind of contact information. And my contact information is, and anyone can either write me at nvoprez@gmail.com or 508-583-0051 is my phone connection. But to get you the video so that you can listen to this this interview yourself at some point in time, if there's someone that could get in contact with me so that I can send them the, you know, the information as well. But there's so much to your story, Sydney, and I really think that there has to be some resource out there, some legal advocate that can help you to get the all the evidence that they're withholding from you to prove the case itself and to show that there were only two stab wounds, not 17. And there was also additional information that was withheld in your case from what you were telling me in the previous conversations.
Yes, the additional information would have been the phone call records, testimony from a maintenance man who worked at the apartment complex, testimony. I have a niece who could have testified also, but, you know, by me being in the depression, I never utilized any of those avenues. Because the assertion was that I got mad and killed the person, you know, and it was nothing like that, you know. And there was more evidence that, I mean, for years, when people watch the video, the first thing that comes to their mind is, why? Which, I mean, for years I wondered, why, what happened, what went on there? I didn't understand. And it was sitting there in the evidence. When I was going over the evidence, I finally understood what went on, but, you know, it didn't really have to go on like that because, in my viewpoint, if the person was dissatisfied with the situation at that time, then, you know, I had already spoken about leaving and going the other way anyway, you know. So it was a situation of that nature to whereas I never understood what went on. And by me being on mental depression, I was like, basically, I just killed someone, you know. You know, and I couldn't stand it. I couldn't take it. I just withdrew into my shell.
Can you tell me what exactly what the mental disorder is that you have?
It's called manic depression.
Manic depression, okay.
Yeah, manic depression. I was diagnosed as a manic depression. Depression back in, had to be in 1983. I had went to, it's called East Mississippi Hospital, which is a mental hospital. In 83 and stayed about 7 months. I had something that went on that just took me spiraling. I mean, just put me in a depression. And I went back in 85 to, it's called Mississippi State Hospital, called Whitfield. It's a state hospital for mental patients also. So I have a long history of mental illness. And, of course, it wasn't the mental illness that caused the altercation, but it was the mental illness that has caused me to be locked up for 20 years because, I was not able to defend myself. You know, I have two half-brothers who are actually, I look at my situation and I think about them. I have two half-brothers who are actually mentally retarded. And I wonder what would have happened if that would have been them, you know? How would they have treated them, you know? And it actually makes me mad thinking about someone having, you know, these are my half-brothers, but I love them to death, you know, and I always looked out for them as a kid and as it was coming up. And it makes me mad to even think that someone would even do one of them like that, you know. But I look at my own situation, and basically that's what they did to me, you know. They took advantage of my mental illness and used it against me.
That's what happens a lot of times. I will say one thing. This, I don't know if you've ever heard of the National Alliance on Mental Illnesses. It's called NAMI. But NAMI also, if you ever get in contact with them, may be of some help as far as trying to get some legal help for you in that area. And they deal especially with the mentally ill. And their number is 703-524-7600. And they are, again, that's another resource for the mentally ill. They are people that have come together throughout the years because of mental illnesses running in family members in other other areas. But that might be some resource you may want to try to connect with at some point in time. And I can give you the address at another time.
Okay.
And then, and if anyone in the audience, after hearing this, wants to help, they can try to also try to find some pro bono legal help for you, pro bono criminal legal help in that area. And there are plenty of pro bono lawyers in the country. In your state in Mississippi, there must be. So it's just a matter of doing a little bit of research. And hopefully through hearing your story, others can help in some way. If someone wanted to help you, Sydney, if anyone in the audience hears and wants to help you, how would they get in contact with you?
Well, there's actually two ways. I have a number that they could contact. I have a brother that says he loves me, but that they could contact him, and they could also there's an email that they could send me an email to also.
Okay, and the email address?
It's all small letters. Athena Crystal, athenacrystal 114@gmail.com.
Okay, and can you say that again in a little bit clearer?
Athena Crystal.
Athena Crystal, athenacrystal.
Right.
@gmail.com.
11,
okay.
No, 114@gmail.com.
Athena Crystal, 114.
Right.
@gmail.com. Okay.
Right. Okay. And my brother's phone number is 213-7063.
Okay, repeat that again.
228-213-7063. His name is Clarence Stallworth.
Okay. Because I'm sure there's someone that knows of some resource that they can, you know, find for you to help you in these situations. So, Sydney, how old were you when you went in? And when did you go in?
I got locked up in November 8, 1998, and I was 38 years old. And I'm soon to be 60 this year.
And you've been in so far for 21 years?
Yes, 22 in November. It'll be 22 years in November.
Years wasted. When you could have been getting treatment and you probably could have been living a normal life as everyone else. Again, I do not believe in prisons. I really don't. Prisons may be for serial killers, for terrorists, and even at that, it's and they should put in some really extensive treatment for them. But for prisoners that are in, especially for first-time offenders who have committed a fatality, and especially during a period in their lives when they're going through such already painful psychological problems, in depression especially, these are prisoners that should be considered, just like anyone else, to be able to get the treatment and someday be free. And what they're doing in America, they are incarcerating everyone and throwing the key away. In Norway, Germany, and places like that, they have been proven to be effective the way they run their prisons. And their prisons are not run like with steel bars and all this cold cold treatment that they get. They're treated like human beings, and they're rehabilitated like they're worth something. In this country, it's about vengeance, it's about hatred, it's about racism, it's about power and greed and prisons for profit. And this is why they are so determined not to have prisoners free. And this is why we have to fight to make it just the opposite. Prisoners deserve just like anyone else. You mentioned King David. King David wasn't the only one that murdered. Moses murdered an Egyptian. Saul, before becoming Apostle Paul, persecuted so many Christians, and yet God used them in a powerful way. So people really need to look at these things, because everyone, there's not a perfect person in this world that has not committed some kind of sin. And many have gotten away with the sins that they have committed, which probably were much more serious than they want to admit. So what is it exactly do they offer you at the prison or for the Department of Corrections in Mississippi? What is it exactly that they offer to help you to get through your illness and to try to move forward? And do they offer any kind of programs that you can participate in?
Well, they do have school programs. They have a GED program. They have the ABE for those who are not ready. They have anger management programs, things of that nature. But they don't have anything to teach as far as to those who come in to learn trades. So when they go out, they have something to live on, something that they can use to go on with their lives. That's what's the biggest part, the biggest problem with the Department of Correction. If they don't rehabilitate, they do nothing to rehabilitate the inmates. They just warehouse.
Nationwide,
you know?
I understand a lot of prisoners that they themselves come up with ideas to rehabilitate themselves. So many used their artwork, they've used their music. A lot of them have created inventions, you know, drawings where they are recommending, like, doctors examining patients via the computer. Prisoners have come up with their own rehabilitative programs. I want to ask you now, did you graduate from high school?
Yes, I graduated from high school.
So a GED is not going to help someone that graduated from high school. A prisoner wanted to take higher educational correspondence courses with Adams University, which is an accredited university that is registered with the Bureau of Prisons, and that prisoner was denied by the Department of Corrections officials. These are the things that prisoners try to do. They try to become productive, and they're denied all these opportunities. When they're offering all these GEDs for many prisoners that have already graduated from high school. And this is something the public needs to know, too. Prisoners are not lowlifes. There's a lot of prisoners who have that ability to move forward, even in education, academics, and they're being denied. But yet they offer them GEDs, which they don't need at all. I understand through this epidemic that they are offering 3 free calls a week for prisoners to be able to call home. Is that happening in your state as well?
Yeah, they're allowing them to make 2 free calls here a week, you know, to contact. Yeah, in Mississippi, but they don't have anything to sanitize with. They have some chemical that they normally clean with, and this is what they're giving us to sanitize with. There are rumors that they had a nurse that was infected that was here. But of course, it's only a rumor. There's actually a rumor from the staff. This facility that I am at is a type of facility that does not inform their employees of what's going on. They just keep them in the dark. The employees are actually scared because they don't know whether the nurse actually was infected or not. And they never told them until, you know, it was informed by other people that the nurse was infected, not by the powers that be here. you know.
That's happening in Massachusetts as well, and I'm sure across the country. But even in the prisons here, there's at least that I've heard of that there's at least four or five prisons in Massachusetts where the staff and the prisoners have been determined to be positive, tested positive for the virus. And I understand from some of the prisoners that there was one that I believe may have passed away from it. But this is happening in the prisons, and they're releasing a lot of prisoners. And unfortunately, they're just releasing. They're not releasing any violent or anything like that. But again, first-time offenders is something they need to look at as well if they do really release a lot of them. And they're saying that they need to because this, if it gets throughout the prisons, 2.5 million prisoners in this country, you can imagine what's going to happen with this whole country, with the virus spreading quickly into the prisons and then out of the prisons, with the employees going home and going out into the communities, spreading it with others. So they need to come up with some kind of serious solution and quick.
Yeah,
sanitizers. I understood that they were supposed to give all the prisoners throughout the country soaps and sanitizers and other things to prevent themselves from getting infected. And you're saying they haven't done that yet. And a prisoner told me that they gave them a small bar of soap, and that was it. So someone is not being forthcoming in what they're doing to help these prisoners, to, you know, prevent them from getting the virus.
They come around Monday with a bar of soap. It was a bar of soap that you would purchase off the canteen. That was what they did here. Monday morning, which a lot of the inmates they didn't know what it was for, but I knew immediately. You know, I'm 60 years old. I knew immediately knew what it was for to keep your hands washed. But you got tables, you got rails, you got, you know. Of course, we interact with all these things with the staff coming in that needs to be constantly sanitized, and we don't have anything to do that with. I used to work in the kitchen, and I actually snuck back up to the kitchen after I quit and got some bleach in order to have some bleach to keep the zone. I got some bleach and some what they call therapeutic shampoo to keep the zone kind of sanitized. I mean, the other people don't have this in the other zone, but I was just went up there, and I hate to say it, I had to steal some to get some, you know. But I knew I needed it, you know, because, you know, I'm up in age, and, I mean, my health is not that good either. So I know I would be one of the first people, if I caught it, that might pass away. So I'm not trying to get there, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a thing that I had to do in order to protect myself. I say steal it, but the supervisor actually gave it to me. But in her eyes, it's like, you know, if I get caught with it, it's stolen. But, you know, we understood, you know, we all understand that it was a favor that she did for me. So if I got caught with it, I would hold up for it. So that's what's happening here. That they're not, nowhere are they giving any type of sanitizer. You have to make your own if you want to survive, you know?
Yeah. Jeez.
But you know, it's sad. We're talking about the as far as the criminal justice system. A lot of people don't understand the criminal justice system. It's set up to whereas the you have your public defenders who cop their clients out to the DA in order to give the DA a good record. The DA runs for a judge on his record. So once the DA becomes the judge, then he allows that public defender to make money. All he has to do is call the judge for a bond reduction, which might have cost his client $2,500. But now he can call the judge, and he don't even have to go to court. The judge will reduce the bond. They are using the prison system as a favor system. Favor for
yeah.
a favor. Favor for a favor. You know?
That's what it is. And even in the communities, lawyers, they will do for who they know, or a friend of a friend or something like that. They don't actually, they pick and choose who they help. But I wanted to quickly say to, if your brother can, on your behalf or you yourself, write or call the Mississippi Center for Justice and it's the MS Center for Justice.org, and their phone number is 601-352-2269. They're a pro bono nonprofit that works with racial and economic and social justice, criminal justice. Mississippi Center for Legal Services as well, and that's mslegalservices.org, and that number is 1-800-498-1804, and they too work with those who are indigent. These are just some of them. The Mississippi College School of Law clinical programs, and that is law.mc.edu/academic/clinics, and that telephone number is 601-925-7180. And this is a Mississippi College School of Law offering clinical opportunities for students as well. So, and this is also something that you can try contacting. I don't know, in this Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance, which you're not an immigrant, you are actually a citizen of the United States, but there are so many, the Mississippi Volunteer Lawyers Project, mvlp.net, and that's 601-960-9577. These are things that actually, if you can get your brother or someone that is willing to make these calls to explain the situation, to try to get help for you, it would be a blessing. And I'm sure you being a Christian, I'm sure that you'll be able to get the help that you need.
Well,
there's also
the
Mississippi Workers Center for Human Rights, and that's 662-334-1122. These are all kinds of pro bono opportunities for prisoners of Mississippi to try to get help. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is statewide, but they have them in different states too, and that's splcenter.org, and that's 601-948-8882. This is the Southern Poverty Law Center. There's a lot of University of Mississippi School of Law clinical programs. That's 662-915-7429. These are all, universities have their law schools, their law clinics, and their programs. These are all opportunities to try to get someone to contact them. And this University of Mississippi School of Law clinical programs, they do work with criminal appeals. And so these are the ones that you want to try to contact. Let them know, and maybe they can get the evidence that's been withheld from you all these years that could have proven that you did not do the alleged allegations that have been out there accusing you of stabbing 17 times, accusing you of stabbing out of hatred. There's a reason for a lot of things that happen, and we live in a country where it's just black and white. No government official looks at anything in between. And there are so many different sides to every story. There are so many things that have to be looked at in a different light. And this is sad because it's not. And so many people have gone to prison. So many, unfortunately, have committed suicide while in prison. So many have been killed, and it was alleged to have been suicide. There's so much going on in these prisons behind these cages. And no one deserves to be in a small cage for the rest of their lives, especially when they've had problems prior to. Basically, what it is they are victims who became offenders and are victimized all over again.
That's true. That's true.
But we have to look at these areas, and we have to try to get people in the communities involved. And I know people have lost loved ones, but they too have to understand sometimes it is not done purposely. It is done at a time when someone is either going through some psychological problem. It could be by accident. It could be self-protection, self-defense. It could be any reason at all. Not everyone is out to hurt someone purposely. And no one is born bad. Throughout the years, people go through their different phases. And sometimes there's no support out there for some people. Sometimes there's no father in the picture. Sometimes the people that are supportive are just giving the wrong answers to those who have been victimized and have become offenders. We need to look at all of these areas because there's so much pain in this country, so much unnecessary pain, and so much suffering. And people that are overseeing prisoners, people have to realize these overseers also are human beings, and they are, some of them are criminal-minded. Some of those, they might have breakdowns themselves. But there's always a threat to people that are in prison by their overseers, some of their overseers, just like law enforcement. There are good law enforcement and there are bad. And unfortunately, a lot of these bad ones are making it very difficult for the good ones. Just like in the prisons, there are good guards, there are good instructors in these different programs, and there are bad ones. But unfortunately, those who are good are too afraid to speak up. And because they're afraid to speak up, they're considered just as bad as their evil peers. These are all things that need to be considered.
Your prison system here in Mississippi, I can't speak on the other prisons, but it's set up to where the officials, actually like the gang members, kind of run the prison, you know, and they take, and it's basically they use them as saying that, well, we're going to punish you if you don't straighten this out, you know. If you don't straighten this out, then we're gonna lock you down. We're gonna punish you. So if anything happens, they lock everybody down. And what it is saying is, y'all need to straighten this out. You know, if y'all don't straighten this out, we're gonna lock you down. When all they had to do is punish the individual who did whatever they did. You know, and it's so backwards. I'm an older person, and I mean, I think the world has actually went mad compared to when I come up as a kid, the things that I see.
Exactly.
But it's so backwards in the prison setting. Rather than pulling together, they're pulling against each other, you know. In Mississippi, they're killing each other because of colors. I mean, gang members, you know. And inside of that, they allow them to do it, not necessarily the killer, but they allow them to have this violence in order to keep other people in line, you know. So it's sad. It's really sad that they really allow the gangs to run the prisons in Mississippi. And of course,
in Mississippi, nationwide, this has happened. Guards don't go after the violent ones. Guards target those who are the ones that are doing good, the least problematic. Guards will target them. We have some cowards overseeing prisoners in this country, real cowards, and they enjoy going after the meek and the mild because they're no threat. They don't have to worry about getting their, you know, themselves beaten. They cover up for those that they know are not afraid of them and will go after them in a second.
Yeah.
And they use these people. They use these people to get at who they want them to get at. I've seen it over and over again throughout my 20-something years advocating for prisoners, and I've heard it from prisoners across the country.
But, you know, the sad thing is, by me being locked up and trying to fight for my freedom, it's sad because I run across the answer to the prison violence in my process of trying to do my own legal work, you know. And it's right there before, and they won't do it. I mean, you could actually end prison violence, the majority of it. Of course, you're going to have people that's going to fight. But you can end the violence that the gang brings to the prison system. And it's simple. It's set out in the laws, and they don't do it. And I wonder the reason that they don't do it is because it gives them an advantage of not having to do things that they should be doing, you know?
They're also like gladiators. They use it for entertainment, pitting gangs against gangs. But I know, I believe it was when some of the states out west or Midwest, those who were in gangs that wanted to leave the gang, there was, and I believe it's somewhere in Connecticut or one of those states, where they have a place for people that want to get out of the gang memberships, that they can go and without fearing for their lives. And this is what they need to build more of facilities for people that want to leave gangs. And also people that have been in for years, like yourself, 20 years or more, these are the ones that, and they're older now, these are the ones they want to release so that they can try to work with the youth, work with trying to prevent these young people from making the same mistakes as they have made. And this is something that, again, People that have been through it are the best teachers. And anyone can go to college and come out of college with a piece of paper with no experience, and they're not going to see any success. But people that have been through the incarceration, people that have been through substances, people that have been through domestic violence, these are the ones that have a lot to offer to those who are going through the same thing. They don't need these pieces of paper. They need the qualifications. And what we're getting in the prison system, what we're getting all over the country, are people in government that are hiring their own relatives or their own friends or their friends of their own friends. And these people have no qualifications whatsoever. So now we have people running the country with a piece of paper, or maybe not even a piece of paper, and no experience, and a gung-ho feeling that they can do what they want to do with anybody and get away with it. And this is why there's no success in the American prisons.
The rehabilitation has to be there, because what happens if you don't rehabilitate them, then you put them back out in society with the same mental attitude that they went in with.
Exactly.
And worse, because once they come in here, it's like a game to them. I mean, these youngsters, it might be 60 or 70 of them, and they think it's a play school. And it when they need to be learning from this experience, and the people who are over them are only using and manipulating them to their advantage. You know, it's sad. I like to say this. A lot of people may not like it. But what they have today as gangs, it needs to be taken out of our society, because this is hurting. You imagine the little kids that cannot go out in their yards and play because of fear of they might come shooting through there because they're trying to shoot some other gang rival, you know? Things of that nature.
A lot of these gang members, they themselves grew up in harsh environments. A lot of them grew up in the ghettos. A lot of them grew up without fathers. And we don't have role models out there anymore. We have a lot of people that have titles, and they're so gung-ho. You know, they take these powers. Once they get these titles, they're about nothing. You know, I called one. It was from the National Action Network for help for a prisoner. And the first thing that they wanted was a membership. Have you joined the membership? Do you have money put in the membership? And this is about nothing, because once that money starts coming in, all these people start changing their focus, not on prison reform, not on prisoners, but they change it on education, or they change it on something else. And the politics of the whole thing is what's causing so many to fall. But there are so many gang members, I'm sure, who came from very dysfunctional families, and rather than get the help that they need to prevent them from joining gangs, they don't get anything. So they're seeking someone or people that are going through the same situation they're going through. And who else would they find but other members out there who have joined gangs, coming from the same background, no support, nothing. And they're all full of frustration and anger. They're all full of hatred, because they know that they needed help. And these same people that are denying you the help today and denying other prisoners the help, those who are denying women who are in need of help, or men that are in need of help in some way, shape, or form, those are the very ones that are depriving these people of the help that they need. So they go around in their suits with their titles, thinking they're Mr. Big Shots or Miss Big Shots, and the ones that need the help are out there joining gangs to get the support and help that they need. That's where gang membership started, I believe. We live in a country that's so full of greed that all wants the power. They want that acknowledgement. They want to feel like God himself. You know, this is sad, because some organizations are poor, and they're poor because they're not looking for funding. They're using their own monies to help others, which brings us all down to that level of poverty. And yet the ones that have the money, the ones that have the funding to do so much good for the people in need, are the ones that are up there smoking their cigars and having their drinks and feeling like big shots. This is a problem, because the prisons wouldn't be full if people were out there helping. And I will say, American Civil Liberties Union, they could do a lot more than they're doing, because they've deprived every prisoner, unless it's a class action or it's immigration issues, bringing in all kinds of money. NAACP, Years ago, they used to be there. They got their memberships now. They're still looking. They're trying to get prisoners to donate to their organizations when they don't even consider the prisoners anymore. These are organizations, in my book, that are about nothing. They're not helping their own. They're not helping anyone else's own. They're getting all this money, and they're publicizing all what they're doing, but they're not transparent is the word I'm trying to use. Amnesty International. I want to see transparency. They go to these other countries, Amnesty International. This is where they're claiming to do all this work, but you don't even see transparency in those areas. So all of these big-shot organizations in this country make me sick because I haven't seen them do anything. And I've been working with so many prisoners. I got boxes and boxes and boxes of applications, of letters from prisoners crying out for help. And where is the help?
That is the way I feel. You know, because people look at prisoners as being, oh, he's tough and he's, how many nights have I laid in my bed and cried because I didn't have any help, no one to help me. I mean, I got a brother, he says he loves me, but his actions, you know, I mean, it hurts.
Yeah.
You would never imagine how many nights I've laid up under the cover, crying because mama's gone, my older sister's gone, and no one loves me, you know. And
you know, Sydney, I will say God loves you, and I'll tell you, God, people don't believe it's ever going to happen, but it's going to happen. It might be happening now with everything going on around us, weather-wise, you know, viruses, plagues, or whatever they call them, right around Passover. You know, the people, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, the kingdom halls, they're all closed down. This is a definite sign of the final days. And people are going to, they're not going to be able to change their mind and decide they want to help you or anyone else in that last day. This year might be the end. This might be the last year that anybody's ever going to see a chance to make a change and help. I strongly believe that. And I've been studying cultures and religions for years and years now. So you are loved because God is coming after those in high places in this world today. And those in high places are the government, the worldly governments. Instead of building these prisons, these hard, cold steel bars and cement walls and floors, they need to build hospitals. And they need to have extensive treatment in those hospitals, extensive training. And when you hear about these suicides and homicides in these prisons, they need to get rid of whoever's causing it. And trying to get politicians in to do a serious, serious, serious investigation, or even the Attorney General's office. There was mention that they were going to do serious investigations in all the prisons in Massachusetts, and it's yet to be done. And this was months and months and months ago, while people are dying left and right. This is not just in one state. This is in all the states. And I'm sure it's in Mississippi, Missouri, Texas, California, New York, Virginia, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Arkansas, Alabama. You know, it's Ohio, Illinois. I mean, all these places, Wisconsin. You know, all these places, those I haven't even mentioned, Nevada, Texas. These are all places that need to be investigated. Too many people are dying unnecessarily, and it needs to be investigated. What you're going through, please don't ever feel you're not loved. You made a mistake, and they over-exaggerated, which they do all the time. And the media is another problem we have in this country, because the media is quick to report as soon as they hear something without themselves investigating. They could be going into the prisons and talking directly with the prisoners, but instead they choose to listen to the wrong people and report the wrong news, over-exaggerate, and this is what we have, you and others in prison, feeling be neglected and forgotten because no one wants to go directly to the horses and find out the truth.
You mentioned the American Civil Liberties Union. I contacted them and several more organizations, and like you were saying, they were into bigger and better things, something to make themselves look good, basically what they were saying.
In Pennsylvania, there were prisoners that were being detained in holes. I contacted them, and I contacted some of these politicians, and I begged them to go in because these prisoners were being abused. One prisoner died, and these all happened in a three-month period. I called Civil Liberties again, and got the same thing. They didn't have the funding, they couldn't help, or they just didn't answer their phones. Another prisoner died. And here I'm still begging these politicians. Leanna Washington was one of them too. And after the third prisoner died, she goes before the media and says that she had no idea what was going on, when I still have all kinds of documentation showing that I contacted her, begged her. ACLU, I called them at 11 o'clock at night. I was so exhausted. I was so upset. And I told them the third prisoner died. Three prisoners dying unnecessarily because these people didn't want to take the time to make a visit. The families of those prisoners, she said that they had the bodies were all cremated. None of the bodies were cremated. They wanted to cremate one of them, and Shirley Kitchen prevented it from happening. I sent an email, and I said she should meet with the families. She hasn't met with the families to this day. Meet with the families. Find out the truth. Find out what really happened instead of saying their bodies were cremated. I sleep with a lot of these things at nighttime. I go through a lot of these things because it hurt me so much, and I felt so helpless because I couldn't help them. And that's what goes on in this country today. We live in an ignorant, cold-hearted country that thinks that they are the biggest thing in the world. They might have more power or more money, but they're about nothing. I've traveled 11 third world countries. I've seen poverty, and I've seen strong people that had more compassion than a lot of the people in this country, and I hate to say it because I was born and raised in Massachusetts. I've been at both ends of the world, and I've seen it. I cannot stand the fact that there is so much selfishness going on in this country when there are so many prisoners that are in need of help, like yourself. And there are so many people in the streets homeless. Where are the homeless people through this virus? I hear they're in tents under bridges. I'm sorry, Sydney, but I really want you to contact these people. Try to get the help you need, and I will do some research myself. And again, I'd like to have you come back on the show again at another time so we can start looking for updates and talking about updates.
Okay. A lot of the places that you've given me the numbers to, I have already contacted. And I've been through Mississippi pretty good. And I'm not understanding. They won't help me.
They won't help a lot of people. This is what I'm saying. But you know what? I'm going to do some research, too. We're running out of time, Sid, so if you want to say any last-minute things before we close, and then again, we will be talking and hopefully have you on within the next week or two.
The only thing that I would like to say is, which is something that comes in my mind all the time, I think about my two half-brothers who are retarded. And I think that they could be in this situation. But when those out in the audience think, I could be one of the brothers or I could be one of the cousins who is in this situation that needs help. You know, a lot of people don't realize the things that you do comes back to you. There's a scripture that says, throw your bread upon the water, and in due season it will come back to you. So the love that you give and express to people will eventually come back. It may not come back how you want it to, but God sees everything that you do, and he blesses you for it. And I thank you for having this opportunity.
Thank you so much.
To let people know my situation.
And we will have you back on again, okay? And those three that were from Pennsylvania, Joe Holcomb, Joe Kappa, and Joe Clifford Finney, my hat goes off to their families for taking that courage and whatever. Thank you so much, and we will hopefully talk to you soon. We're signing off now.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.